Okay, I'll start with this. I'm rewriting the book, republishing it, Talking to Night Lights 2. It will be available as a Kindle book. What I did not include, because there's just no way to describe this in words that I think works or does it justice, the guides, when I connected with them, they gave me an experience and I was hypnotized. They told me to count to two. And I thought, nothing's going to happen in the count of two. When I heard the word two, I was completely blown out of my body into what felt like liquid and connected with everything that is. It was absolutely shattering and wonderful. And in that moment, they had given me a new concept of what we are and how we exist. I didn't want to come back to the body. I didn't have any desire to come back to the body, but I knew that's where I'm supposed to be at this time. However, that is what helped me go forward with all of this. And to have the desire to go back and revisit it and say, this stuff is important. Anyone has access to this material and those guides while we're here. So what can I add to that to make it a better description? I finally have the concept. Odo, a character from a TV show from Deep Space Nine, he dissolves into liquid form. No body, just liquid, fluid, and connected. That never dawned on me until recently that I could make an analogy. He becomes one with all that is. That's what it was. I dissolved and became one with all that is. Mind-blowing. This is Conscious Living, and this is also Wendy's Coffee House. I'm Wendy. This has been one heck of a week, all sorts of things just absolutely exploding on many fronts. So I was glad that, for one thing, I didn't have an interview scheduled because I was going to actually talk about what I'm doing right now. It made it complicated to focus. There's just so much up in the air. And if you're in the media like I am, you're bombarded on all sides, and it's hard to escape from what's happening. And then again, you know, for various reasons, it might be good not to escape, because there's an opportunity to figure out how you're going to respond, how you're going to react, and what you can do to, if anything, create a sense of calmness, a sense of peace, a sense of, in some way, shape, or form, appreciation that we have so many connections right now that we can see and possibly intervene in ways that we weren't able to do before, when these kinds of crises, atrocities, and complete and total breakdowns of systems occurred. And right now, we can look at the past and see how it turned out last time and ask, is that the way we want to go forward? Everyone will answer for himself. But again, that's why it was a good time not to have anything scheduled. I do have some other interviews scheduled coming up. But the reason I wanted to talk about this time, my own stuff, is because I decided to reissue the book Talking to Nightlights. So it's Talking to Nightlights 2. And I had wanted to do this for quite some time. As a matter of fact, I wanted to do it as soon as I found out there were typos in the book and they didn't get fixed. Okay. And I tried. But then there was a little money attached to it that said if I wanted to, and even though I had been told they had been fixed and found out they weren't, then that little ding, I decided, okay, no, I'll wait until I have more to say. So it's back out. Pre-orders, whenever you're listening to this, it is available through the Amazon Kindle program. And the reason I did that is because it was going to be immediate. I didn't have to worry about a whole lot of downtime trying to figure out what publisher to go through. I did look at a few, and I appreciate Carolyn Willman for suggesting what she did in terms of, you know, hardcover or softcover paperback books versus Kindle. So I did a little bit of homework there. Amazing. It's been 2007 is when the other one came out. And not only when you have a spiritually transformative event, that's one of the ways that it describes what I had happened to me. It takes a while to reconcile that. So even though it started in December 1997, I wrote the book and had it published in 2007. the stuff that kept happening with it continued to change my perspective on what it was that I was experiencing, because it kind of triggered an awakening that continued to have a cascade effect. And to explain that in any uncertain terms and make it really linear and logical and, you know, in some way more, I guess, concrete, it doesn't work that way. So the fact that the other things that happened continued to show me that we are more than just a physical body. And there are others around us in all sorts of shapes, sizes, consciousness, sentient forms that we don't always track. Some people do. And then others become specialists. They'll talk with fairies. They'll talk with Bigfoot, Sasquatch. They'll talk with aliens, ETs. But everyone is doing something that does have one common denominator. They are expanding, exploring, experiencing consciousness at a different level. And so that's what this is all about. And some people have tried to say that the alien UFO ET thing is a way for us to expand our conscious awareness. And that's what it's designed to do. Well, there have been other things going on that are also a part of that too. And when I started seeing fairies, or being aware that fairies were around and not knowing that that was one of those other things that existed, it became obvious to me that there's so much out there that we have the opportunity to connect with. Intuition is the way to go with it. If it feels okay, then that's going forward. If it feels uncomfortable, suspicious, scary, then that's a clue. Stop. And it doesn't mean it isn't okay. It means you're not ready. All right. You know when you're ready. And when you're ready, that fear dissolves. And all of a sudden, it becomes like a what if? It's the curiosity that takes you forward. The curiosity and that sense of fearlessness that I need to know more about what's happening. I'm going to explore it. And I trust that I have help. That doesn't mean a person is standing right beside you. It means your non-physical support, a guardian angel, a spirit guide, another element that isn't present for us to see in a sense that it's a human being, but for us to sense, because it is a guardian and something that we can count on anytime, 24/7. I've had experiences where I was in danger, and that was my one-stop shop for rescue. I heard a voice at one point, and I wrote about this in the book. This is when I was with a girlfriend and we were teenagers and isolated, alone, swimming in a creek. A couple of guys come down, say hi. They're looking for my uncle. They're going to go back. This is out on a farm, farmland. They're going to go look for the uncle. They drive off. I have this sudden, I didn't have any sense that they were threatening, but I had this sudden voice beside me say, run. I don't know if it was male or female. I didn't question. I just ran along with my friend. And she was surprised, for one thing, because, again, it wasn't obviously a threatening situation. Later on, when we ran and stood, there's a grove of cabins, stood behind a cabin, not the first one. I thought that'd be too obvious. One that we could see everything. And at first, I wasn't sure if, you know, I was just kind of, if I had misunderstood. And then, sure enough, this truck that they're in comes slowly along the path, very quickly. They hadn't gone. All they did was go up the top of the hill and turn around. So they're trying to figure out where we went, and they're slowly negotiating this little area to see if we're in one of the cabins, and it's obvious. Well, they don't find us, and they leave. You can hear them rolling off. But that was one of those things where I knew that this was a one-shot run now. And I've had those kinds of experiences to tell me, to show me, to give me the awareness that we have spirit companions. Whenever they show up, it isn't to question, it isn't to deny, it isn't to doubt. It's to trust that that is our connection to a higher spirit, to a higher knowing, to a different plane of existence. So when I was working with Carolyn recently, the show we did about Helene Hansel, Helene was fantastic. She was so incredibly ahead of her time, but she had advantage of working with other people who were also very plugged in to how consciousness works and how we're constantly creating this reality around us. Now, it doesn't mean I make the bookshelf. It means I have a response or an interaction, engagement with the things in my reality, and I interpret them a certain way. I've tried to help people before and say, well, this is how it works. It doesn't work that way for them because it wasn't something that was automatic, autopilot, preset in their conscious awareness. And so when I watch them fail doing something that always worked for me, fail safe, I was astounded. I thought, how could it happen? Then I realized, because we each bring our own self to the equation, our own beliefs, our own patterns, thought systems, bias, we bring that. So someone is a skeptic, they bring that to the equation. And sometimes that one skeptic in a group can turn a project from positive to negative, because it takes that one roadblock, that one cement piece to stymie any fluidity that's coming through from the spirit plane. So learning that, I decided, okay, if it didn't manifest in a group, it didn't mean that it was impossible. It just meant not at that moment. And the other thing too is sometimes a group being focused on the same thing can create extraordinary results. Spoon bending is an example. I went to a spoon bending class 20 years ago, and the instructor gave us all the same, directions, and we all sat there, and the spoons bent. And not only did they bend, they were like butter, like melted. I'm like, oh, wow, this is phenomenal. Go home and try it. And it didn't bend quite so easy. I did the very same thing. It didn't bend quite so easy. I figured out how to do it, but it took a little bit more focus, concentration, intent, and direction from my own, my own self of, okay, this will happen. I can do this. And realized that the difference was we were all focused in the same direction at the same time. All of that energy then amplified the result. So that's what's happening now for people who are focused on negative. There you go. Positive. There you go. It's a matter of where you choose to invest your consciousness, your being, your creative ability, your creation. And I think in so many ways, we've had wonderful teachers who've really paved the path and given us breadcrumbs that we can follow through. Helene Hansel, back to her, was on my list. Now, the books that you can get right now, because Carolyn has made them available, In Contact with Other Realms and Adventurous Experiences in Awareness, The Name It and Claim It Game, which was her first one, and Confessions of an 83-Year-Old Sage. And talking about how perspective, perception, and attitude changes your results. And if you believe in something, then your words have to reflect the belief. I am, I can, I will. Those are all power statements. That's your power. Listening to others who use that language is also empowering. There's a little saying of my own that I keep in front of me at all times. It works for me. You can create your own saying. My saying is, you are magic. You are divine. With you, all things are possible. And that's something I learned, that if I have that as my mantra, all things are possible. Then I don't look at any kind of, I don't want to say failure, but if I miss a deadline on something I want to happen, I don't see that as losing. I see that as just a moment, a delay. Helene also has that same kind of attitude, which is why I was drawn to her in the first place, is that it isn't a failure. It's a delay or a redirect. It may be that whatever I was focused on isn't necessarily for my highest good or not the right thing at the right time. So I continue to work on whatever it is I'm trying to draw, to tune into, to tap, and then allow the universe to co-create with me and show me where the openings are. Here's an example and a way of giving you a pattern that comes with the paranormal. I had ordered Jose Silva's book, The Mind Control Method, because I couldn't find one that I had. So I ordered a new paperback. Well, I was in the midst of reading the paperback, brand new, had probably opened, you know, and just glanced across one chapter. And the dog, she's a year old. She was out. The first thing she does is grab that paperback and proceed to eat it. I'm not there. My husband shows me, look what I found. Okay, so I'm putting a picture on the blog so you see what it looks like. All right, it's not completely destroyed, but she's really done a good job on the edges and a few pages are missing. The other thing, though, is when I got the book back, this is what was impossible. There's a page turned down, perfectly turned down, like you would turn the page to read in your book. This was a brand new printed book. It didn't go anywhere else first. It came directly to me, and there were no pages turned down. And I don't turn pages down in my books. I use sticky notes. Page 135, A Psychiatrist Works with Mind Control, is the chapter. And this has, on each page, both pages, there are instructions on how you can locate the abnormality of an illness. So it's basically a test page. And so your instructions are to see this person and decide where the issue is on their body. And there's one on one page and one on the other. And I look at it, and very, very, very small voice says, left ankle. And I'm thinking, okay, why would I say that? I'm looking at the circle's left ankle. All right, well, so what I do immediately is, maybe that means a left kidney. And saying this out loud and revisiting it, knowing what was the purpose of that. So I could tell the difference, because the very first still small voice was correct. Me trying to micromanage and go back and think it was incorrect. So it was a reminder that when we have that still small voice, that's the voice of intuition. As you work with it more, it becomes louder in most cases. It will become more obvious, because the first path you go through is the trial and error of, is this it? No, that isn't. You know, you're trying to figure out what it sounds like, how it works for you. And some people work with images. You'll get a flash of a color or a scent, and that will tell you something about the situation. And so it's hard to say one size fits all, because that isn't the way it works. You have to determine for yourself how receptive you are to different types of stimuli, whether it's auditory, whether it's tactile, whether you'll feel something in your body. I've had situations where someone was ill and I would feel in my body ill in whatever particular spot of their body. And it took me a while to figure that out. All right. So it's a reflection in a way. And you are reflecting, they are reflecting. And those kinds of things are hard to talk about, because not everybody has those same feelings. And people who don't have those feelings don't often believe that it's possible. So it's a matter of trial and error of, okay, where do I take this? What do I do with it? How do I proceed? That little demonstration is how my guides work with me. Like I said, I don't turn the pages down. So I was directed to work with that exercise. And most likely, I wasn't going to be doing that exercise. I was interested more about some of the content of the book, not about doing the exercise. So it immediately directed me to there to give me a challenge and a new insight. That's how this stuff works. One of the things I included in the Talking to Night Lights book number 2 is a channeling experience I had at a place called the Light Center, which is in my area, used for an event space. And I was doing, this was a group event and a demonstration of channeling. It happened to be that one of the participants had just lost a spouse. And I didn't know all of this. I just knew that during that, they're all in a circle. And during that event, I was prompted to ask this person a question and use the name. Now, this is a name I don't have any connection to, so I know it's not mine, but I also don't know who it belongs to. But this name is there, and I am directed again to ask this woman, is this name familiar to you? She says, no, I don't. It had no meaning. Didn't respond in a way that gave me a clue that that might be important. So I'm like, okay, I'll just continue channeling for the group with other information that's coming through. Well, then I get a prompt, listening to your guides and listening to others who work with you on the other side. The prompt was to ask her again. Okay, so no harm done. You know, I'm just ask her again. Are you sure? Is there some relationship to this name? And this time, it's kind of like she's not real comfortable. She's, no. Uh-uh. So I can read into it all I want. The bottom line is no. That name doesn't mean anything to her. So I continue. And then there's this other prompt. And at this point, I'm like, oh, gosh. I have to ask her again. Now, why? Because that's what the guides are saying. And if I don't honor my process with the guides aren't going to work with me. All right? It's just basically a matter of, this is what I've agreed to do. If I'm going to do it, then I need to follow through. Right or wrong. It's not about me. It's about my relationship with the guides. And at this point, with this person and the people who are watching, because I know that it looks like I am not respecting her saying, no, go away. But the guides are saying there's a reason. And I've also been told by the guides that sometimes I'm not going to know the reason, and that is not an issue. Just let go and proceed, because the information is important somehow, some way. So the third time I ask her, does this name in any way, shape, or form belong to you? Do you know what it means and why I'm being asked to tell you this name? I tried to spell it out the best way that I could, that I need to find out more about this name. And maybe you have an answer. At that point, loudly, she says, that name was the one she was given at birth, the one her family called her, and we never used that name. Now, I don't know who was more stunned, me or the audience. Like, okay, whoa, I did not expect that. I did not see it coming. I didn't realize that was her spouse. It was also the woman who had just died and was present and was trying to give her a heads up clue. This is legit. She had more information and it was for her. And the thing that I got also after following through and delivering, there was this wonderful, and I really struggled with how to present this in a book, but I did the best I could. It felt like a pink energy. I've had that pink energy before. It's like an energy hug, and you feel you're just washed in this vibration frequency, and I see the color pink, and it feels wonderful. But that's what I was given as a way of saying that, yes, I'm here, I'm present, and continue from the spirit side. But going through that and, you know, questioning, how is this going to look? I'm going to be wrong, and people are going to think I'm not presenting the information that I should be presenting. And that part I had to let go of. I had to know that sometimes that I will be wrong, for one thing, and that it isn't about what everybody else thinks. It's about how I am doing my work, and if I'm doing it authentically in my own way, trying to be as upfront and honest and open in this transition, this transformation, this interpretation of information, delivering how I think I can, being objective, delivering the information and letting it go where it needs to go. The other thing, too, is that, and this is another thing I have experienced through having to do this, it may not even be for the person you think is the target. The person you are directed may be there with someone else, and until they hear that information, they're not going to accept it. So it's almost, it's a tangential, it's a way of getting the information out to where it needs to go. And then the other person carries it forward and said, well, you know, they talked about this, this, and that. And then the other person who really needs to hear something will go and have information from a channel. But they wouldn't have done it until they had that prompt. So a lot of it, we are so hung up on, and this is ego, on whether I'm right or wrong. And whether it looks, you know, if other people think I'm weird or crazy or, you know, in some way, shape, or form, not legit. I tell you what, most people who do this, from my experience, and those who are authentic, have no desire to harm anyone with the information. That's the whole point. The one thing that you do when you do this, do no harm. Let it go. Don't use it as a tool over someone else. Use it as, and this is a way of putting it, as an accessory. Okay? The difference is a tool, it would be like a hammer. An accessory is a yardstick. You can measure. A tool, you know, again, our language creates limitations and misunderstandings. But the easiest way, because yeah, you can also say a yardstick is a tool, but a hammer can also be used to injure in a certain way. It's meant to do heavy duty hard work, where the yardstick isn't, that's not what it's developed for. Okay, if you're in a pinch, yeah, you can hit somebody with a yardstick. See, this is where it gets complicated. And there was always a, well, I can get around that and come back with this argument. And that's okay. That's okay. But for the purpose of delivering the information, I'm trying to give you a way of looking at something differently and expanding your awareness to say, when someone gives you a message, they're trying to give you a piece of information that could be helpful and for the highest good. It's not about trying to take away your power. You have the choice at any time to say, this doesn't apply to me. It doesn't resonate. It doesn't make sense to me. And then maybe 5 minutes, 5 years, 15 years later, something might fall into place and give you the insight, the information, the background that you need for that to make sense. And that happens when people are told, you had a past life with such and such. And they're going, I don't believe in past lives. And then something else will happen that is similar to that piece of information, but it might be a billboard. It might be clothing. It might be being in a certain city. And then those little reminders, those little prompts, those familiar images will start to make basically an impact. And the dots will start to fill in. And I've dealt with people who remember their past lives and who have done the work. I mean, recently, you know, one of my interviews was about a guy who was a detective. And no, he did not buy into reincarnation. But suddenly the dots lined up. And then there he was with all of the clues. And another person that I interviewed about finding out he was a Nazi soldier. And that was the very last person that he wanted to be identified as. Why do we need some of these memories? Why do we need to go back and connect the dots? There's another woman, I believe the name is Betty Riley. I have the book. And she had a past life conflict because she started mimicking her actions, her consciousness, her awareness. She started mimicking one of the past life incarnations she had, and it was really giving her some major health issues. It wasn't a positive mimic. It was a very, very self-destructive because she was in a bad space at the end of that past life. And until she was able to reconcile it, she got help with the ghost of the person who was there for her, with her in that past life, trying to get her attention and giving her a way forward when she reconciled, ah, this isn't mine. But she also couldn't get rid of the baggage from the past life. And so that's what this was about. It was about helping her to release the baggage she had carried forward without knowing that it didn't belong to her anymore. that she could drop it. It was gone. But once she found out what happened to this person who showed up as a ghost to show her a way of seeing what had happened at the end of that past life that she didn't have any awareness of because she was in a physical body. She didn't get to see the 360. She didn't get to see all of it, but she could with the help of going back and doing this other work. There's also the therapist who worked with her validates this story as well. But these kinds of things are around us all the time. And so when I was looking at my book and trying to go back into, you know, talking to Nightlights, what's the purpose? Why do I want to bring it forward? Because I changed so much. And because there are things that happened as a result of that awakening, that and the Nightlights are still active. All right. They have a different way of, one of them has been with me almost since the beginning, and so it should be burned out, but it hasn't. And it's learned how to avoid that by not blinking as frequently to conserve the energy. It's just a whole different experience in itself, all right? So I've had some videos posted, and it just looks like a blinking light, but there's more to it because this non-corporeal element is involved. Paranormal consciousness, I don't know that we have the language for this stuff. I think we do the best we can. Fourth dimensional entity, we don't have all of the descriptors that make this easy to reconcile. And not only that, different languages. I'm speaking English, you know, so in Spanish, in all these different languages, there are going to be derivations, different interpretations that might even change the meaning, okay? So, and that's what the ET, alien, extra-dimensional, non-corporeals tell me, that's one thing that really trips us up, is our language. And that's why telepathy from a non-corporeal is so much more direct, because it cuts through the language barrier. Whatever language you speak, when it's telepathic, it cuts through that and it makes sense to you. So if you need to get out of harm's way, you're told in your language to get out of harm's way. And at some point, we've all been in different bodies, in different ethnicities, with speaking different languages. So we even have this in our database. And that's another show entirely. But the thing about working with this is that you have to expand your definitions and not be stuck with the current definition. And that a part of that happened with going through the Talking to Nightlights, the prophecies that they gave me and the connections. There was one on Tutankhamun, and I'm like, that's the last thing I'm thinking of. But the energies that came through gave me information saying that he was a sickly child. And he had others around him who were basically taking away his power because he was too sick to be able to do anything with it. Only recently did they discover, by doing the DNA research, that he was indeed a sickly child. That wasn't available. They didn't have the science for that until more recently. And I wasn't a student studying that information, so it was it was really far out to be able to have that and write it down. And then to see that was almost verbatim in what they had discovered in the research. Now, those things change, and especially, you know, right now when we're discovering that there are civilizations that we are still finding because of the way our Earth has grown, tectonic plates shift, civilizations get buried. So we only go by what we, in terms of science, can figure out, did this exist? Are these relics a part of our history? And as our ability to investigate with better tools improves, then we have different answers. So everything we have right now is basically conjecture. It's the best available information at the time. I'm going to go back to that Silva book, because what happened, the Silva mind control method. So when that book, when I had that experience, I immediately ordered another book. I wouldn't have done this if that one had not been eaten by the dog. The dog ate my homework. I also found somewhere else, I can't remember what I was reading. Darn it. Somebody was working on a manuscript and the dog ate it. And so they had tried two or three times to finish the manuscript. The dog ate it. And they decided, all right, now is not the right time for this manuscript. So they gave it a rest and then went back to it. But I thought that was funny, because at the time this is happening when the dog is eating the Silva book, I'm going to go get a new book. Well, then I get the other book, the Silva mind control method for getting help from the other side. Well, of course. Okay, why wouldn't I be drawn to that book? Because they keep saying, you're going to do more work as a medium. And I keep saying, no, no, no. And then they keep giving me more information and pointing out ways that I can do that. And I'm like, you can always say no. But I found out saying yes, I learned more. So, okay, why not? What else is going on here? And that was so funny because of all the books, I got tons of books, she chose, was the new one. And then going through and seeing the page that was turned down by the folks that the dog keeps barking at. He does this special thing. At first, you think it's maybe the TV. So you turn off the TV. No, no. Then he goes to a direct corner of the room where nothing is. And that, and it's not a frightful, fearful bark. It's a, I see you. I know you're there bark. I see you. And we had to, you know, listen to figure out what is going on. I see you. I know you're there. So it's he's not frightened. He's not alerting. He's just saying, pay attention. Pay attention. I got your number. I'd love to know what he sees. They see better infrared than we do, so I'm sure there's something that he's able to tap into that isn't in our sight range. And that has been present ever since I decided I need to really go back and rework the book. So it's been more, you know, at least more in my, you know, on the front burner. And that has been a reminder that this stuff is going on, not just for me, but for everyone. So as you work your own abilities, your own intuition, your own knowing, you'll also get help in ways maybe you haven't considered. It comes in handy to know how other people have gone through this and what they see as reminders, as helpers, as hints, as clues, because you never know when that is also going to relate to you. And in reading and in, you know, coming across some of this information, it's like, oh my gosh, this is what I've been doing. And this is why it makes so much sense, or why I was guided to open a certain book. The stuff that's going on in our world right now, we can't stop it, but we can change how we react to it. And we might be able to intercede in some way, shift the momentum and make it go a different direction. So that's part of what happens when you learn that you are more than a physical body. You have other abilities. You have other assets that you can tap into. And you are never going to be stuck in the physical form, because we all transition. What we are called to do right now is to become more empowered, more magical in our thinking and our believing, that maybe there's something we can do that we haven't tried yet. And that's where our power is. It's asking us to expand our abilities, our knowing, our intuition, our magic, our metaphysical power. That's what this is about. And then we go forward. I don't have the answers. I do believe in miracles. And you're part of the process. The book will be out, Talking to Nightlights 2, and it'll be available through Amazon as a Kindle book. I'll let you know more about that on the blog, Silva Mind Control Method. I recommend it. And I'll put the pictures of what the dog did. Also of the little, in there, the two pages that were the worksheets for the healing, figuring out what was wrong with the body. People who are intuitive healers deal with this, and you can learn how to do that. That's also what the Silva Mind Control Method is about, in terms of healing others or yourself, focusing on what you're picking up on intuitively and going with that. I just loved it because that was a message of, okay, my initial that sense was it was that left ankle. And then I immediately said, okay, so it must be the left kidney. Why did I do that? As a demonstration. The first hunch, the first insight was already there. I knew it before I needed it. And then I went back and connected the dots and found out, okay, this is why it worked. It was that still small voice. That's where the power is. Imagine that. But we're going to take it one step further, because that wasn't the actual answer. All right, this was the answer suggested for the book. We don't know what the actual affliction was. This was just an example so you could have an idea of how the process worked. The suggested illness, affliction, was the left ankle. So who knows? Maybe the kidney's involved somewhere on a different plane. Check out the blog, Talking to Nightlights, on WordPress, and I'll put links for the books for the Name It, Claim It, those other games, or those other books. Think good thoughts. That's what comes back to you. Thank you for listening.